You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I am your host, Courtney Coulson. This is Minute 20. This minute opens with Holloway saying, "Just one planet with a moon capable of sustaining life," and ends with Shaw saying, "It's what I choose to believe." I guess we can assume Charlie means capable of sustaining human life, or he means that it's Earth-like in nature, otherwise that statement makes no sense. There are many inhospitable conditions for humans that other species would thrive in, say sub-zero temperatures or deep under the ocean. Yet another example of pseudoscientific words being thrown around in the script with no regard for what they actually mean. The thing is, they are close to realism on a lot of things, but just missed it by this much. I think Star Trek gets away with it because it goes well into technobabble territory. It is completely meaningless, but we get an idea of what they mean through context. Reverse the polarity of the neutron flow and all that. Okay, that's actually Doctor Who, but you get what I mean. But does a science fiction story need to be scientifically accurate? Yes, absolutely. It's all about suspension of disbelief, which is important in any genre. The threshold can shift dramatically depending on what the story is. Our expectations for realism in a cartoon are not the same as in a live-action drama aimed at adults. And it's not even about accuracy so much as it is about authenticity, if something makes sense within the world the story has established. In the case of Alien, it feels very authentic to most audiences because the performances are so casual and downplayed. People are acting like real people. The technology is also believable because it's nothing fancy and all looked weathered and worn. It's not asking too much of the audience. There isn't a huge amount of science in the original Alien, but it feels very authentic to the concept it puts forward. These are truckers in space. Ash is the only scientist on board, and he can only speculate as to the exact nature of the xenomorph. What little insight he provides only serves to heighten our intrigue and fear. Prometheus doesn't seem to know if it wants to be a hard science fiction or a soft science fiction. I suppose I should explain those terms. There are two ways of looking at it. One definition is that hard science fiction is focused on the hard or natural sciences, which is to say physics, astronomy, chemistry, biology, and so on. Where the soft sciences are social sciences, such as psychology, anthropology, and sociology. But these terms can also be used to describe hard science fiction as stories that put a great emphasis on scientific realism, and it plays a central part in the story to the point that there is no story without the science. And soft science fiction is less interested in the scientific accuracy and instead focuses on the social and moral ramifications of such a world. Black Mirror would be an excellent example. It's not really concerned with how the technology works, it just does. And yet it's also a very realistic world, which allows it to more readily provide commentary on our modern world. Frankenstein, Clockwork Orange, 1984, and Flowers for Algernon are all examples of soft science fiction. They are very socially focused. It's not about how Frankenstein's monster was brought to life or how Charlie became intelligent all of a sudden. This is not to be confused with science fantasies and space operas like Star Wars or Jupiter Ascending, which are basically just fantasy with a futuristic skin over the top of it. You can argue that they are also soft science fiction, but I'll put them in their own box for the sake of this discussion. I heard Arrival frequently described as a hard science fiction, and while it is a very smart science fiction story, it's primarily a movie about linguistics. The temporal stuff is left fairly mysterious. Whereas Ridley Scott's other science fiction, The Martian, is hard sci-fi. It's lighter viewing than Arrival, but it's hard science fiction in both senses of the word. It focuses on the hard sciences, there's a big emphasis on accuracy, especially physics, but also the science is integral to moving the plot along. Every struggle, every triumph Mark Watney faces is the direct result of something scientific. Except for the initial sandstorm that got him stuck on Mars in the first place, Mars just doesn't have enough wind, but that's neither here nor there. So hopefully I've given you enough of the basics, even if they are kind of subjective. Where am I going with all of this? Well, Prometheus is clearly asking the big questions about existence and origins and evolution and alien life and all of that. It's promising to be 2001 A Space Odyssey, which is hard sci-fi, by the way, but that's not what we get. We have a crew of scientists who are here to make scientific discoveries, and yet there's no real science to be had here at all. Honestly, I can understand why people felt let down by this. Science fiction fans have high standards. We are more scientifically literate than general audiences. Prometheus can come across as condescending in this regard, assuming we won't notice or don't know any better. Going back to what I was saying about the original Alien, it works because we believe it. We don't know any more than the characters do. But Prometheus is all about the quest for answers. It has nowhere to hide. We cut from Holloway and Shaw looking optimistic to Fifield and Milburn looking less than enthused.
So you're saying we're here because of a map you two kids found in a cave, is that right?
We literally have the hard sciences up against the soft sciences here. Charlie and Ellie are archaeologists, and Fifield and Milburn are a geologist and biologist, respectively. I wonder, is there really any animosity between the hard and soft sciences like this? Some kind of East Coast-West Coast rivalry?
No, not a map, an invitation.
Some people debate this, that it's not an invitation but a warning, but I mean, how else are you going to interpret those images? Big dude pointing to the stars, even a dog knows what pointing means. It's not a warning. Where the signal picked up by the Nostromo and Alien was ambiguous. Also, if they didn't want us going there, why did they leave any evidence at all? I should point out that all three of Ridley's Alien films essentially follow the same plot structure. Crew picks up a signal, goes to investigate, or hell breaks loose. Usually there's at least one android and at least one person gets forcibly impregnated by an alien. So, if there is a third prequel film, I guess we know what to expect.
We call them engineers.
Engineers? Do you mind telling us what they engineered?
They engineered us.
From what we can gather, engineers go to lifeless planets and seed life there. But they also come back to monitor us at random intervals. In the original script, it was every 11,000 years, as mentioned in earlier episodes. The theory they put forth there is acceptable, but I just don't get why any of these changes were made. They should have kept the monolith, they should have kept the 11,000 year cycle, keep it simple. I mean, we've had anatomically modern humans for about 70 to 80,000 years, but I could let that slide. As we covered in the last episode, the dates and locations of their visits were totally random and make no sense. What were the engineers doing here? It doesn't make it more mysterious, it just seems illogical. I would really love to know why this change was made. It went from something fairly solid and plausible to something far weaker. Also, what about all the other animals on this planet? Are they just here to support us? Are they just an unavoidable consequence of creating humans? Why waste millions of years with dinosaurs? What the fuck was that about? I am on a rant now, out of my way. I'm Alex Jones. The chemicals in the water has turned the frogs gay. Alright. Why in the world would Shaw and Holloway think there was any connection between the engineer visits and the changes in DNA? Correlation does not equal causation. Aside from which, how would these two scientists alone have been the ones to make this discovery? These seven artifacts aren't really enough to prove anything. Shaw and Holloway seem so confident, but why? I mean, we see dragons in lots of cultures too, doesn't mean they're real. As friend of the show, Steph, points out, you couldn't get someone to invest $10 on this evidence, let alone $1 trillion. I say this is the second problem with the film so far. I think we'll keep a running tally. Unlike problem one, which was why the crew weren't briefed before leaving Earth, I cannot come up with any reasonable justification for this. It is crucial that the evidence be overwhelming. It should be something shocking. They should have found the remains of an engineer or a mutated human or something.
Okay, so do you have anything to back that up? No, I mean, look, if you're willing to discount 3 centuries of Darwinism, that's... Woo! But how do you know?
I don't. But it's what I choose to believe.
It's what I choose to believe. I've already discussed the problem with that line in episode 10, but now we see it's not only something her father valued, but Elizabeth does too. This feels more like indoctrination than something she genuinely, personally believes in. And why does belief have to come into it at all? This should be purely scientific. Stephanie raises a good point that the heart of Christianity is that God reaches down to us, we cannot reach him. This actually projects the idea that Shaw is hubristic. And I'm inclined to agree. While she doesn't think the engineers are gods, there should be some doubt or worry there. What if she is meddling in God's domain? She doesn't know. She doesn't show many actual Christian traits. She doesn't seem to have a personal relationship with God. It seems like this misguided fantasy that stems from her parents. It's performative. I think she wants to have the faith her parents had, but she just can't find it in herself. On the one hand, I could dismiss this as bad writing and poor motivation, and that is surely the cause. But it's kind of interesting to consider it from the character's perspective. I know people who were raised in a religious family and they continue the traditions, but it's hollow. My parents were exactly like that for a long time. They were raised Catholic, and they sent my brothers and I to a Catholic school, so they went through the motions of going to church and all of that, but I have to assume it was mostly to make their own parents happy, so I think Shaw is kind of like that. Something Stephanie and I talked about when watching Prometheus was the lack of empathy or compassion in this world. Some characters are friendlier than others, but no one seems to care much about anyone else, which is a recurring theme in Alien. And Steph asks, could we read this as commentary that a post-faith world is a post-caring one? I think that's an interesting possibility, but again, Shaw's faith would have to be much stronger to really cement that idea. There are just so many fascinating things to explore here that are never touched upon. Elizabeth as a woman of science and faith, the state of religion and morality a century from now, all of that could have enriched this material. I don't think this movie quite knows what it wants to be about. I think an example of something equivalent that does it better would probably be Contact. It's a little dated now. Well, I've only seen the movie with Jodie Foster, I haven't actually read Carl Sagan's book, but Carl Sagan wrote it at a time where there really was this huge divide between science and religion, and it really tackled those conversations and debates head on. Obviously, watching it now, you know, it's very primitive. I think the conversation has moved on, and so I think a movie like Prometheus would have been, that could have been really interesting to go, well, this is what faith is in the 22nd century, and here are these people maybe going to meet God. There's a lot there, and you just don't touch it. Ah, it's frustrating. They say good plot comes out of character, and thus far everything has been set up to show that Shaw is an innocent, optimistic, true believer, and by the end of the film she is broken and defeated, but more badass as a result. This trope is known as Break the Cutie, so I think she has a good arc, and I do like Shaw as a character, but as I've said, I don't believe her faith. It doesn't feel genuine to me. It's interesting to compare her to Ripley in that sense. Ripley doesn't go through a conventional arc. She remains the same throughout the film. What changes is that she gains more and more authority and control as the situation becomes more out of control. To quote Sigourney, she's a woman who becomes a warrior and goes from someone rational to someone who's completely instinctive. It's still an arc, but not one born out of the character's weaknesses or flaws. Ripley is simply adapting to her situation. I don't think either of these approaches to character is inherently superior to the other. The change can come from internally or externally, that's fine. Though I do find the internal arcs can be a little obvious sometimes. This character is a selfish jerk, but by the end he will be nice or sacrifice himself in a selfless act. Or, this character is afraid of spiders, but by the end she will conquer her fear. Whereas more reactionary characters like Ripley, or really anyone on the Nostromo, are simply doing what they can to survive. Lambert is the only one who expresses any kind of fear of space or the unknown. Some people find it harder to connect with characters like that. In fact, a common criticism of Alien upon its initial release was that the crew were prickly and not very empathetic. We get a good sense of their personalities, but not their characters. We don't know anyone's hopes or dreams or fears, and you don't always need to. That said, character motivation for a majority of the crew of the Prometheus is kind of weak or inconsistent. But for the more central characters, Shaw, Holloway, Vickers, Wayland, Yannick, and especially David, All the internal conflicts and weaknesses and hopes and dreams are fairly explicit. As the other characters, motivation is something critics commonly criticise, and rightly so. While these characters are well cast and performed, half the time it's uncertain why they're behaving the way they do. David is perhaps the one exception. His journey makes perfect sense. But already we have Milburn and Fifield acting offended. Why? They are being paid, that's all they should care about. They might be surprised or confused, but angry? It seems like a contrived conflict, simply there to emphasise Elizabeth's faith and to create this false science versus religion divide. Removing this from the film would change nothing. Again, this film has a high school level understanding of faith and philosophy and science. I simply don't think these screenwriters were up to the task of delving into these very heavy topics, and that's a real shame. So to sum it up, I think this minute is the make or break moment for most viewers. You're either on board with this or you're not. Up until this minute, we've had visually stunning, thought-provoking scenes. But now the characters are actually talking, and everything coming out of their mouths is bullshit. Perhaps this might have been better and more ambiguous if the film had been silent, or near silent, like a certain Stanley Kubrick film. And yet, as much as I can see its flaws and criticise it, I still love Prometheus. It's this beautiful world that I like spending time in, and I think it's because of those logical inconsistencies that I keep thinking about it. It gets my imagination going. I start thinking about all these other explanations that utilize real science or history. I think about all these other avenues not explored. Honestly, I kind of prefer an ambitious movie that fails over either a mediocre or passable film, or even a critically acclaimed one sometimes. I do have an appreciation for those movies that are considered near perfect, but they don't often stay with me. I don't find myself thinking about them as much. Like the aforementioned Arrival, or Ex Machina, or Under the Skin, they are some of my favourite science fiction films, and I would say they are near perfect, but do I think about them as much? Do they inspire me to write, or podcast, or draw, or sculpt, or cosplay? Not really. Hell, I think about Prometheus more than Alien, because Alien is essentially perfect. I don't find myself imagining all these what-ifs, or wondering why the creators made the decisions they did. I am tempted to rewrite the Prometheus script once I finish this podcast series, tally up all the flaws and correct them. Most of the issues aren't beyond correcting with a few minor adjustments. Like, this scene probably just needed about 3 or 4 lines rewritten, and we would have gone from a confusing conversation to a solid, plot-establishing scene. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson, signing off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook. I hate doing self-promotion, but I suppose I should do it. If you like the show, please rate and review it on iTunes and on Facebook, and help spread the word about the show, be it on Reddit or any other online groups or forums, or in the streets, on the street corner. Tell everyone about me. I also have a Ko-fi account, K-O-F-I, which is a kind of digital tip jar of sorts. Absolutely no pressure to contribute, but anything you can spare helps with hosting and advertising and all of that.